Good morning again, and it's, let's see, it's 11:16:32 for the exact time. This is Glenn Coble. You're listening to On the Air, and we'll be on the air here for another 45 minutes, roughly, 44 minutes, and we'll then in the next hour, we'll switch over to Swap Shop. We haven't been doing a lot of swapping lately, but we will switch over. And I've got to, I'm going to lead in, get you ready for Valentine's Day in the Swap Shop. I'm going to read you a few of the really romantic poets, poems that we have over there in the, by famous, I guess famous, some of them are famous, some not so famous. Shakespeare is one of them. E.E. Cummings is one of my favorite poets. He usually does things a little more lighthearted. So we're going to read four of those poems for you. Get you ready so that you and your hubby or you and your wifey can, you know, snuggle up and enjoy Valentine's Day, which happens on the 14th. Let me see what the day, what day that is. The 14th of February comes on a Sunday. By the way, we're talking in this, the first 2 hours on the air, we're talking about Groundhog Day and Buckeye Chuck and his predecessor, I guess you could call him, was Punxsutawney Phil. But as I mentioned, there are at least 41 other prognosticating groundhogs throughout North America, because there are several of them are out of Canada. They have nothing better to do on February 2nd. And as I mentioned to you, February 2nd was chosen because it happens to be the day exactly in the middle between the last, the first day of winter and the first day of spring. So if you're kind of worried about how, will this winter ever go away, yeah, we're halfway there. We're on the downhill slope, I guess you might say, once we get to Groundhog Day. Not yet. We're not there yet. We were talking in the first hour about a lot of things that happen around Punxsutawney Phil and Buckeye Chuck. But I was it kind of annoys me how those of us in Ohio are down to earth, and we have a good old Buckeye Chuck, who is a groundhog that he doesn't put all that fancy stuff in front of himself. But Punxsutawney Phil, boy, he's got all sorts of fancy stuff. According to legend, the original groundhog, as his life, you know, groundhogs don't live forever. And Punxsutawney Phil started in 1887, I believe it was. And so they had to come up with some sort of legend to explain why he goes on. Now, we have admitted here in Marion, Ohio, that our groundhog has passed probably more than once. he was started, officially, he was started in 1979. So it would be long. Let's see, what is that, 80, 90? That would be 41 years, right? And that's way too long for a groundhog to be alive. But what they do in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, they are in denial. And his life supposedly is extended 7 years. Every summer, he swigs a gulp of his groundhog nog at the annual picnic at Gobbler's Knob. Boy, he's got all sorts of fancy stuff around him. And the groundhog nog, life-extending powers, they don't work on humans, by the way. It only works on groundhogs. And according to the Inner Circle, President Dealey says it extends his life another 7 years. So every 7 years he goes, and well, every year he has a little bit more groundhog nog, and it continues to extend his life. But it'll extend it for 7 years. So if they run out of it, apparently he can go 7 years without having a refill. Buckeye Chuck just drinks water and wildlife food, whatever they feed him. Hopefully not the ends of people's fingers. Like I was telling you, several of these groundhogs like to nip their owners, their handlers, even a mare in one of the cases. I'll have to ask Mayor Schertzer if he's ever been nipped by Buckeye Chuck. I don't think he has, but I think we would have heard about that. Anyway, another thing is Punxsutawney Phil gets this really fancy name. I don't know if you knew Charlie Evers. He was not a fancy person. He was a very bright man. He was a kind man. He was my friend, but he was not a really fancy-pantsy guy, right? But apparently the people out there in Punxsutawney are fancy-pantsies. Punxsutawney Phil, he has a very, very fancy title. His title, you ready? You're never going to be able to write this down, so I'll tell you a couple of times what it is. Not that anybody cares. Punxsutawney Phil, seer of seers, sage of sages, prognosticator of prognosticators, and weather prophet extraordinary, Phil. That's his name. I don't know why he was given such a name. It was Punxsutawney Phil, seer of seers, sage of sages, prognosticator of prognosticators, and weather prophet extraordinary. Anyway, I don't know where he was actually given that name by the Punxsutawney newspaper editor back in 1886. In a whole bunch of announcements from the newspaper there in Punxsutawney. I thought newspapers were supposed to be honest. Nobody gets a title like that, honestly. Punxsutawney, by the way, the newspaper was called, I don't know if it still is, but the Punxsutawney back when they gave him that name was called the Punxsutawney Spirit. And the first trip to the now famous Gobbler's Knob happened the year after Phil scored his righteous title, as they say in their news release. He got a righteous title, not just a normal title, right? Oh, well. Punxsutawney Phil. Punxsutawney Phil, seer of seers, sage of sages, prognosticator of prognosticators, and weather prophet extraordinary. I think we ought to have a contest where we give Buckeye Chuck a really fancy title. Nah, that would go against our community values, right? We don't need any we don't need no stinking title, as the man would say. Anyway, you know, it's kind of interesting. Apparently, the Germans started asking groundhogs about spring as an excuse to have a party. Now, that's where this started from, right? You know, out there in Pennsylvania, there are a lot of German people. You've heard of the Pennsylvania Dutch, and they were actually from Germany, Deutschland. And they didn't have anything to do during the middle of the winter. They were mostly farmers. So the ground was hard as a rock with snow on it. So they decided they needed an excuse for a party. The first celebrants of Groundhog Day were the Pennsylvania Dutch. And they used the holiday as an excuse to get together and party on February 2nd. That's almost, you know, depending on whether you have a leap year or not, it's exactly halfway through winter. So what better time to gather together and have your friends and neighbors come over and eat and I don't think they had ground dog steak or anything like that. But they get their friends and neighbors together and eat some food and drink some good drink and look ahead to the coming spring. Now, I do that all winter long. I now have grow lights in my basement, and know if there are any policemen listening to this show, I do not grow bad stuff. I grow peppers, and I grow, let's see, I have basil, and I have cilantro, and I have lettuce, and I have peppers, the little tiny ornamental peppers. And what else do I have down there? Some spinach. Yeah, that's what I grow in my basement. Not that wacky weed, right? But anyway, I start looking forward to spring usually right after Christmas. And my garden in my basement is really sprung up and looking good with all those little fancy peppers. I don't know if you can eat them or not. They're only about, an inch long, and they're red. I'm kind of afraid that they're really hot. So I'll have to look up where we got them from. I'll have to look up to see if I can eat them or not. Okay, maybe I can throw them into a stir fry or something. I could chop them up, you know, and might add a little spice to my stir fries. I like hot food. Not hot food, but I like warm food. Okay, Groundhog Day owes a lot to a much older European tradition, by the way, of Candlemas. But that was popularized in the late 1800s by a newspaper editor. Groundhog Day was. And the newspaper editor was Clymer Fries. And he was inspired by the hunting tradition of gathering together and barbecuing groundhogs and drinking beer. Never heard of anybody barbecuing a groundhog. I've heard a lot of people drinking beer, though. The tradition had been well kept and called ground. They had what they called groundhog lodges. Which have been described as a place for members to throw away worries, cares, and woes and have a good laugh at themselves. Now, that's really where it kind of started from. And so when I was kind of teasing about eating groundhog steaks, apparently these folks did eat groundhog. And then apparently they felt guilty and they canonized one of them just about, Punxsutawney Phil. Like I said earlier, he has a pretty bad success rate. According to the National Climatic Data Center, Punxsutawney Phil has only been right about 39% of the time. Now, there are some places that say it's only 36%. Of course, the Punxsutawney Groundhog Club disputes that and claims that he's been right 100% of the time. Now, no.
Charlie, do you know because of you, more Marian residents know that flipping the bird was invented in 320 B.C. than in any other county in America?
Yes, but I didn't tell you the rest of the story.
What's that?
At 320 B.C. in 1 minute, the fat lip was invented.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Opiates has taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is going to help somebody, I'm all for it. I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth, spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
Well, that first public service announcement was our very own Charlie Evers, who named Buckeye Chuck, or who held the contest that gave the name to Buckeye Chuck. We're I'm proud to have known Charlie. He passed away last year, and great man, great man. He was the guy that was successful in getting him named a Buckeye Buckeye Chuck. Now, like I was telling you, the people, the Punxsutawney Groundhog Club disputes that 39% of the time he's right, and they claim it's 100% of the time. We've heard things like that before, haven't we? All right. Groundhogs, by the way, are great swimmers and tree climbers. I did not know that. You wouldn't necessarily think of groundhogs as good swimmers or even tree climbers if you look at them, because they're kind of blobby, you know, kind of heavy duty, and don't look like they would be very good at that. But, you know, with all that blubber on them, you could see that they would be a good swimmer because they'd float really well. But tree climbers, that's kind of strange. Their preferred habitat is at the edge of a woods. And, you know, you've seen them, unfortunately, you've seen them dead on the highway, but you've seen them by the highway. They like to be near woods, but they meander through lots of our fields, especially here in north central Ohio. Be careful when you see one. You never know when it's Buckeye Chuck, right? But they prefer to be near the edge of woods. They don't really live in those fields. They just happen to wander through them. But they are known to climb up trees. That's where they go to observe things, I guess, looking out for critters that might eat them. I don't know if coyotes would attack them. I don't know what a predator would look like to a groundhog. We'll have to ask. We've got a lot of questions to ask James when he comes back next month. Hey, James, I hope you're feeling okay. James Anderson, our naturalist here in Marion, he is being quarantined. I'm not sure whether he got some bug or whether a friend got a bug. That's why he's not here today. He would normally be here today. But we'll have to ask him all these. I've got all these questions. I should have written them down. Maybe I can remember them next year. I'll keep my notes from today's show, and maybe that'll remind me of all the questions I had. But anyway, it says they climb up in trees just to observe what's going on around them and also to get out of trouble. You know, that's a good place if you have some critter that doesn't climb. That's a good place to get away from them, right? I did read that bear story, I don't know, maybe a month ago or so, about the young boy who climbed way up in a tree to get away from a bear. Great story. I love it. By James Whitcomb Riley. Anyway, where are we? So they climb up to get out of harm's way. They do live in burrows, which they can get out of trouble that way, too. But if they happen to be wandering across a cornfield, and not near their burrow, and they happen to see a little tree, they can climb up in that tree to get away from, let's say, a coyote or a bobcat, if there's a bobcat around. Doesn't tell me here what critters like to eat, other than humans, like to eat groundhogs. Groundhogs. They do swim in ponds occasionally. They're very slow in the pond, that way they can get across a pond without having to go all the way around it. That's why they're so fat. They don't exercise. Oh, me. I'm sorry about that. You knew that they were very deep, deep, deep sleepers. They spend the winter hibernating. That's why they nip people when they wake them up and drag them out of their den. Punxsutawney Phil has his wife and a kid in there with him. Nothing worse than waking up to your wife yelling at you to take out the trash and a kid wanting you to play baseball with him, you know? me. Okay. But they do spend the winter hibernating. They dig down, apparently, in the burrow, and their breathing and heartbeat, they slow way down to a snail's pace, and their body temperature goes down, too. It doesn't freeze, but like a reptile, but it goes down. It stays above freezing, but it does go way down. They survive the cold season in their below frost line burrows. You know, they get low enough that they're below that frost line, so it never quite gets down to 32 degrees. And one of the reasons why they're fat is because they build that fat up all year long, so that while they're hibernating, they have something for their body to live off of, the blubber. And that's what I'm doing. I'm building up the blubber. So if I ever hibernate, and as a matter of fact, I hibernate every day usually. But if I ever hibernate for long periods of time, I've got enough to last me, I would say, a good couple of months. All right. In the warmer parts of the world, it says here that the groundhogs hibernate as little as only 3 months. But when they live in the cold regions, they can sleep as long as 6 months, maybe even a little more sometimes, if they live up in Canada, where a lot of them are royalty. Yeah, like I said, 41, and that's all the ones I could find. There were 41 different prognosticators, and so they are. Not few and far between. There are lots of them. But it seemed like about a third of them were from Canada when I was looking them up. Okay. Groundhogs spend their winter hibernating. I told you that. And some of them do sleep as long as 6 months or maybe a little bit more. I probably can put 6 months together of sleep time in a year. Punxsutawney Phil, I already told you what his title was, so we won't go there anymore. Groundhogs can be real jerks. I pointed that out earlier, that groundhogs are noted for biting, nipping, and being aggressive critters. You'd be aggressive too if somebody dragged you out of your bed and you were overweight and you had to live with your wife and kid who were non-social critters. Anyway, they can be socialized or raised with lots of humans around, but I still wouldn't grab them if I didn't have some pretty thick gloves on. Because they retain their wildness. Zookeeper Doug Swartz said he's a trainer at the Staten Island Zoo, which is where, which one lives? It's the Staten Island. I've lost him. Oh, here he is. The Staten Island one. His name is just Staten Island Chuck, or his alternate ego is Charles G. Hogg. Anyway, that zookeeper says he's pretty aggressive. Let's see, I'm saying they're known to be for their aggression. It's not like they just happen to be occasionally aggressive. They're known for their aggression. So you're starting out in a hard place if you want to turn one of those into a friendly critter. And natural impulse is to kill anything that for a groundhog, the natural impulse is to fight first. So you have to work really hard to make them sweet and cuddly. I'm not sure any of them look to me to be sweet and cuddly. Well, that's about all we have about groundhogs. I think we've killed that discussion. We're in the next hour, we're going to go over some love poems, right? We will talk about Valentine's Day and all the traditions that go on around Valentine's Day. Here we've got about another 17-18 minutes to go, and I've run out of stuff. But that's okay. If you have something that you'd like to talk about, give us a call here at, we have a call right now. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the air. How can we help you?
Well, Glenn, are you going out and get any groundhogs this spring and barbecue them?
And no, I'm not going to do that. That sounds absolutely disgusting to me. How about you?
You know what, Glenn? I do listen to you.
Oh, good.
It isn't disgusting to probably a large amount of people that has hunted all their life, fished all their life, and ate wildlife and ate fish. Sometimes they like to pay big money for a certain kind of a fish, but there's all kinds of fish and wildlife.
Yeah, yeah.
If you try it, they wouldn't knock it. But, yeah, I've had young groundhog. Now, there's difference between, you know, when anything gets older. That's just not like us guys, you know.
Yeah, kind of grizzly.
But, I've eaten groundhog several different ways. And if you like any kind of a wildlife, now just because it's a groundhog, I don't know and what they're thinking of, but in the rodent line, you know, with the teeth, mm-hmm. Like a squirrel,
yeah.
Like a rabbit, and they're more or less, like, you know, in the rodent family. And they think, oh, a rat, you know, the same way. But, I've had that, Glenn. And mentioned something about the coyote, whether they'll eat them.
Yeah.
And they're getting so there isn't many groundhog left.
Is that right?
The big-time farmers and the small-time farmers in their day, but they took care of it themselves. But the big-time farmers, they love to have anybody come on their land and shoot the groundhogs because, as far as this high-dollar machinery and stuff go down in a groundhog hole, and it could cause damage to their equipment, and they couldn't get the top off that day. But there's a lot of things that, like that fish. I never heard of a... you ever heard of a sheephead?
Yes, yes.
Well, you know, a lot of people take those and knock them in their head and throw them in back in
the... Yeah, fishermen don't like them, but I assume there are people that eat them.
No, you're quoting that wrong.
Oh, okay.
Fishermen don't knock something in the head and throw it back in a lake. That is cruelty, and it's kind of stupid.
Yeah,
lake
I don't
Erie,
do that.
That big, you think you're going to do away with the sheephead in Lake Erie? No. So why don't you just catch it, release it, and just go on about your business, you know?
Well, we used to go up and fish for walleye, and when walleye would, when we'd get walleye, that would be good, but when we got sheephead, we just re-release them. Why not? Let them live.
And here I am, a hunter and fisherman all my life, and 8 years
you
old.
You know, Scott, when President Trump...
Hang on just a second. I gotta do something here. There we go.
Glenn. Hold on.
I got you. We're good.
Well, I'm still on the air?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I thought maybe it was cut out there. Hey, I don't shoot or catch anything like that unless I release it or shoot it, I eat it. And so.
What is the wildest animal that you've partaken of? Groundhog?
The wildest?
Yeah, the strangest.
Well, I went to Canada and hunted bear and got bear. And
yeah.
That's kind of wild and kind of about the size of a man and bigger. They get up to 600 pounds.
Yeah. And grizzlies get even bigger than that, I think.
I'll tell you one thing. Don't be fearful they're going to come and eat you up as soon as you step out the door. They are one of the smartest, and they can stand up, and their head is up there about 7 foot, and they can get up above the brush and land, and they can smell you really good. And
yeah.
They're afraid of you. You gotta be, use a few tactics to know how to hunt bear like any other thing, but like deer. It's a pretty good-sized animal.
Yeah.
They think, oh, man, that thing isn't going to bother you. Well, you wouldn't want to try to mess around with a buck and rut.
You're absolutely right, yeah.
It would throw you around like a bale of hay, you know, with those antlers. But anyhow, getting back to your, getting back to like the coyote.
Yeah.
All the coyote I notice. I live out here south of town on 12 acres, and I see very, very few. Last year, I never seen any at all groundhog. And a good thing, you know, the way to look, and you're out and about and around the road, you can see roadkill.
Yeah.
And you tell yourself now, roadkill is diminishing because naturally the habitat is gone, and when the habitat's gone, but the coyote was introduced to keep the deer population down, and the insurance companies told the Division of Wildlife, they said, if you can't control them, we're going to get something that can control them. So they introduced the coyote into high, but they said they come from Pennsylvania and they come from West Virginia. And they was put on here for a reason, to go in and kill the young fawn when the mother was around there, and they get the fawn. And it's working out, but that's why the hunter, you know, a lot of people say, oh, those hunters and this and that, why would they want to kill that poor little squirrel? Well, back in the day, that was the way people lived, but today, I'll grant you, there's grocery stores, and you can go get, but people still like the tradition of, and that's an important thing in American society, tradition.
Have you ever had alligator or snake meat?
Yeah, I've eaten that before, yeah, sure have.
That's one of the things that, we went down to Warm Springs, Arkansas, I think it was where FDR went to get better. Anyway, we went down there and ate at a restaurant when I was in the Army Field Band, and they served us all sorts of things. And eating the alligator, I didn't know it was alligator at the time, and it didn't taste like chicken, but it tasted more fishy, and I'm not a big fish fan, but I was surprised after they told me what I was eating.
That's correct. There's a lot of things, if it's prepared right, if it's harvested right, and we don't call it killing hunters. We don't say, well, I killed this, I killed that. We harvest that.
Okay.
Because that's the season on it. It's like picking the corn. It's time to harvest the wildlife, and if you're in an area where there's enough to harvest anymore. But that was the reason for the hunting, is to control the wildlife so it don't get the disease, you know. But I don't think we worry too much about disease, but it does take place here and there. But anyhow, I thought I'd call you and throw in a little
bit. All right. Well,
you have a good time.
Well, thank you. Us city boys need that education.
You got the education, but you steer away from it because you like politics real well.
Well, I do like politics.
there's people that steer away from your likes.
Yes, absolutely.
You gotta compromise with about a little bit of every variety of thing, because that's the world turned, don't it?
Yeah, and that's why I love having people like you call and give me education.
Well, you don't need to be educated. You just be a little bit more
open-minded.
I get your idea. Yeah, if you aren't the outdoor, you are the outdoors person, you know.
Well, I used to fish a lot. Yeah. I don't fish anymore. And I've only hunted once in my life, and I almost shot my foot off, so I quit doing that.
Well, that could be a reason in your whole livelihood that you don't like. You had bad experiences.
Scared the daylights out of me.
What we got now is some exciting programs for young people, and they want to keep young people interested on the correct way of handling firearms, how to appreciate other people's property if you get on it, and this and that. So
I think
a blow down, and they talk about these the 30, 40, 50 clips that a hunter shouldn't need it. I'm agreeing with that 100%.
Yeah.
Don't need that. But, boy, when you pass a law just to get something passed that a guy does like to go out the rifle range and hear that rat-tat-tat-tat-tat, and he pays big money for that gun, but it gets in the wrong hands. That's like a automobile. All of us.
Yeah.
On the automobile, but when it gets in the wrong hands, they're dangerous.
Dangerous, yeah, sure is.
Okay, take care, Glenn.
Okay, thanks for calling in. Have yourself a great day.
Same to you.
Okay, bye-bye. Yeah, now, that's one nice thing about working this show. I have learned so much from my friends that call in, and I consider just about everybody in this world a friend of mine until they prove me wrong. And I learn a lot about it. Now, I like I said, I fished a lot in my life. I didn't hunt a lot. Only hunted that one time. Went out with a friend, went out on his farm where I was very young. I was in my teens. And I consider that very young. I have a granddaughter now that's in 17, so I was about the age I was. And I was walking along, and I was not holding the weapon correctly, and I pulled the trigger accidentally, and the bullet went. We were shooting with bullets, not shotguns, and the bullet went about 2 inches from the end of my toe. And that just scared the holy whatever out of my life. And that was the last time I went hunting. I figured I was not smart enough to be a hunter. And now when I was in the service, I enjoyed the rifle range. During basic training, we did a lot of firing of weapons. We were trained on two different weapons at the time. Vietnam was going on, and they were changing over to the M16 from the M1, I think it was. The M1 weighed about 7 or 8 pounds. It was kind of heavy to carry around. The M16 was, I don't know, less than 2 pounds, I think. But I learned to fire on both of those things, and I learned to respect them. I can remember one time I was walking. I was on the firing range, and you walked down, picked up your target, and brought your target back so that you could score. At least that's the way this particular day was going. We didn't have all the automated stuff that would bring it to and from. It was a long time ago. And so I walked down to the end of the rifle range. Now, you waited till the drill sergeant allowed you, because everybody had to finish shooting. And then you would walk down and you'd get your target and bring it back. Well, I got my target, turned around, started walking back, and I was carrying my weapon the wrong direction. I was pointing right at the tower with my rifle where the drill sergeant was. I don't want to tell you what he called me. I don't think I can say those words on the air. He let me have it. I was jumping in and out of foxholes probably for a half an hour after that. Made me stronger. Made me smarter. I never did that again. It was interesting, and I was a pretty good shooter. I think I made marksman, which is, I wasn't the highest. I think I missed getting to the highest mark by a couple of points, but I was fairly good, you know, especially for a city guy. That I like to think of myself as a city guy, even though South Bend, Indiana is about 100,000, so it's not that big, but that's kind of where I was. South Bend and Valparaiso. I was born in Indianapolis, but I don't remember any of that. So, anyway, I learned a lot. Basic training taught me a lot. Anyway, that's what my livelihood around weapons and fishing. I was a pretty good fisherman. I enjoyed it. My dad and grandfather both took me out fishing. We fished for walleye up in northern Michigan and bass, I really enjoyed that. I wasn't fond of taking the fish off the hook. I was poked a few times by their, you know, by the fins and stuff, and that kind of made me want to wear gloves when I was taking them off the hook. You know, I didn't mind taking them off the hook. I just didn't want to get stuck. And then I come to find out later in life that that doesn't usually happen if you grab the fish the right way. But I was obviously not grabbing it the right way. I learned how to take the fish off the hook, especially on the big ones, by putting it between my knees and taking it off the hook that way. I'm kind of a coward.
I'll admit that. You know, when you're ignorant, you tend to be afraid of things. And I was pretty ignorant of how to do that sort of thing. My father was a minister and not the brightest fisherman in the world. He was a very bright man. He went to Harvard and Boston University and Butler University. He was a bright man, not real bright as far as hunting and fishing go. Dad never hunted that I know of at all. And so I didn't learn that sort of thing. And I think to be good at them and to enjoy them, you really need to learn about your hobbies. I'm pretty good at learning about gardening now. Can't get too badly wounded gardening unless you're not real good at hoeing. You can chop yourself pretty good with a hoe. I haven't done it yet, but I'm very careful with my sharp implements, right? We're going to go in the next hour. We're going to talk about love and all the good stuff that happens when you love somebody. My doggy told me that I should explain to people why I have become an agnostic. We were talking about that last night, my dog and I. And I thought, well, maybe that will be something that I will explain to some people. I've had people ask me since they've listened to me on the radio and wonder why in the world I turned that way, having a father who is a Methodist minister. And I don't think it was a turning at all. I was not rebelling. It was just a situation that my thought process went that way. So one of these days, I will have a show on that. But not this one, not this afternoon. We're going to talk about love and what's love got to do with it. Well, it's going to be Valentine's Day in 2 weeks, so that's why I decided to do that. I might be pushing the envelope a little. We'll talk about love for probably next week, too, a little bit. Maybe I can get some of you people to call in and say why you have fallen in love with your wife or husband. And I've been married for 51 years. I've been in and out of love with that lady several times. And we'll talk about things like that. But today I'm going to read, I think I have 4 poems that I will read to you. And if you have a poem that you'd like to read to me, you're welcome to call and read that poem. Please make sure your radio is turned off if you're going to read a poem to me, because it will really make a mess of the broadcast. All right. Well, we got about 50 seconds, and I'm out of stuff on groundhogs, and I'm not quite ready to jump in to the poems I'm going to read you, by the way. One of them's Elizabeth Barrett Browning. One of them is W.H.R. Auden. One of them is by E.E. Cummings, and the last one is a famous poem. You might have heard of him, William Shakespeare. And we'll read those 3, and maybe you can give me your ideas. It won't take the full 45 minutes, so maybe you can give me a call at 740-383-9944 and tell me what you think of the poems. I'm going to do my best to read it with some oral interpretation. I'll be right back.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1.